Now entering Nerdist.com.
Big Pop Fun.
Welcome to Big Pop Fun, the podcast with your host, Tom Wilson, and guests from every corner of the places where Tom's been and asked to be on the show. Brought to you by Tom's Art at BigPopFun.com. Here's Tom.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Big Pop Fun Podcast with Tom Wilson, who is talking to you right now, the man speaking to you in the little recorder is named Tom Wilson, and I will not use adjectives to describe myself. I'll let you do that. Please, by the end of this podcast, don't use boring, because it's overused by so many other people who listen to the podcast. Welcome to another magical sleigh ride of enchantment and wonder as we gamble and jounce. I loved that. I used the words gamble and jounce, I think, months ago on the podcast, but it was off the top of my head. But I loved that, the idea of all of us gambling and jouncing across the green fields of springtime as we look at each other and say, yes, we're alive, we're here, and we're celebrating each other and our lives, and moving forward into a bright tomorrow. Welcome. Hey, it's brought to you by Art, as it always is. Go and buy something or do something. Hey, I always recommend that you buy something from artists or see a show. This time, I'm saying it's brought to you by you. There's something inside of you that maybe needs to be shared, huh? Those of you who don't paint, write, draw, create, make jewelry, do any sing, play an instrument, do a show, something. And I don't even mean professionally. I don't even mean at a theater. I mean sing a song tonight at dinner with whomever you're with. Just start singing and just have a little piece of art in your lives that was spontaneous and joyous and fun. I hope you do. It's also brought to you by my book, The Masked Man, by me, Tom Wilson. It's available at Amazon and iPad, all that. Nook, Kindle, all those things, whatever they are, iPad, every reader. Just, and if need be, email me. I'll come to your house and read it aloud. Just kidding. So I need a legal disclaimer. Tom does not mean he will literally go to your house and read his book, because somebody will sue me saying, aren't those commercials ridiculous now? When there's a car actually driving in clouds and they need small words saying, you know, stunt driver, unclosed air course, cars do not actually fly. Do not try to drive your car on a cloud. And because someone will go up in a plane, they'll drive a coupe de ville out the back of the plane trying to land on a cloud, and then they'll sue a car company because they thought they could drive on clouds because it was in a commercial. It really is something. And people have sued. Now, lots of companies, I mean, it's really hurt commercial actors because of the line actor portrayal. You now they'll have to hire an actual doctor or something, because it will say actor portrayal of a doctor. You're just wearing a white coat. Doesn't everybody know that that's an actor trying to make a living doing the aspirin commercial? Come on, cut us a break and let be not an actual driver. I know the kid was 3 years old behind the wheel. I'm not going to let my 3-year-old drive the car. But okay, enough of that. Enough of that. On to my guest. When I was a kid in high school, it was a question that the question that was most asked to me, and I'm not kidding, which I didn't like at all. But the question was, what are you on? Because I was acting in the way that I wanted to act. I was not like everyone else. I was out of the ordinary. I liked the arts. I liked blue skies. I liked the way the leaves rustled in the wind. I liked music a lot and listening to it a lot. I liked theater. I liked watching plays. I liked all kinds of art. I liked the, and I celebrated that when I wasn't sick or in the hospital, which I was a lot. So I was I think an effusive and energetic and fun person when I wasn't wheezing and hospitalized or something. But that was the thing that people asked me. What are you on? What are you on, man? Because I guess, and I wasn't acting unusual. I didn't think, I mean, of course, you're a teenager, and there are moments, we all have moments, and there were moments when I was probably quite stupid. But generally, it was just sort of joyous, fun, joking, improvisational, all that stuff. What are you on? Because, as you, I'm sure, well know, if you're that nail that's just sticking out a 16th of an inch above the hardwood floor that everyone else is level with, you're going to get hammered. So what do you, it's a question that I resented a lot. And finally, I guess when I was getting older, was answering, you know, quite sharply. What am I on? I'm on life. Okay. So what I'm not on is whatever boring, stupid thing you're doing, trying to go, you know, sell widgets somewhere to some guy who's yelling at you. So I never ended up selling widgets at some place where some guy yells at me. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but Armin Weitzman is my guest this week. And Armin and I met on the set of Zack Stone Is Going to Be Famous, coming up, what, May 2nd, 10:30 p.m. on MTV. Check it out. It's an actually good show. I don't recommend shows that I'm on that much, I must admit. I just go, yeah, whatever, you watch whatever you want to do. But Zack Stone Is Going to Be Famous is actually a good show that I recommend you watching. Armin plays a character on the show, and we got to be friends on the set. I think that in very significant ways, we're kindred spirits. And I wanted to talk to him on the podcast because I found him out of the ordinary and interesting and refreshing. I hope you enjoy this wide-ranging conversation with Armin Weitzman.
It's Big Pop Fun.
So do you want to wear something more? Are you comfortable in this? You're wearing kind of a jacket with a... You're wearing a tie, we should say, a green tie with designs on it. And
oh, yes. When I was a boy, I wanted to wear a suit and tie every day. That was like my dream.
Did you do it at school?
I did for a long time, but then I don't know if you heard, the film Rushmore came out.
Yeah.
And anyway, I used to dress exactly like that kid.
In life or in school?
In life and in school, but in life. And so... Uh-huh.
Because, I mean, I did the same way, but you really wanted to – I did the same – just like you. I mean, I wore a suit and tie. I tell people, and they don't believe me, I wore a suit and tie to kindergarten.
Okay, well –
to my first day of kindergarten, I showed up with black tie shoes.
Okay, well, that's amazing. We had a uniform at elementary school. I went to, like, a private elementary school that was very – I think looking back now is hoity-toity.
A hoity-toity elementary school.
We were listening to like, Mozart or something, or Beethoven, then we tell our feelings, and I was talking to a bunch of people as if that was normal, and they explained to me that's not normal.
You were talking to a bunch of people at
like
the school?
Like friends of mine, just later in life.
About how you would talk about your feelings.
You listen to Mozart, right, and then you would write down your feelings, and they were like, no, that's not normal, that doesn't happen. So then I learned, it wasn't until maybe 13 when Dead Poets Society, or whatever, when I first saw that, because I came out before then, but I don't know, all those guys.
You were out of school before that, you mean?
Let me try and explain. I guess I meant I was out of the school that had the uniforms. I was then in regular school.
And where was this?
Brentwood School. That was
here in California?
Yeah, seventh grade or so. Yes, and here in California, raised in Los Angeles.
But that's unusual
right.
In Los Angeles. I mean, I'm from back east.
Right.
And in Philadelphia, New York, Boston,
right.
Baltimore, cool. you had definitely a school where you wore suits and ties.
I'm jealous of those guys.
You really, well, I was one of those guys.
Right.
But unlike you, I think I moved to California and I wore a suit and like – I came out here and I had a general interview with a casting director, which
yes.
They kind of just, you're new in town and they've heard about you, so you come
correct.
In to meet them
yes.
or whatever.
Yes,
it's not an audition for something. It's I just want to meet Tom because he's new in town.
Correct.
Well, I show up at this appointment with a professional in Los Angeles, California in a suit.
That's the way to do it.
And I walked into her office and she did not laugh at me.
Right.
But she definitely looked askance. She looked like, what are you doing? And I immediately was off guard with what's the matter? She says, well, I mean, no one's ever worn a suit before to meet me. So that was a thing like, hey, Tom, note to self, don't wear suits. Maybe not. But soon after that, once I got into the whole California deal, then it's almost a decision. Like, I'm not a suit guy.
Right. No.
Like, I wore ties a lot.
Right.
And then I just stopped. And it's really hard to get me into a tie now.
Right. See, that's beautiful, though. I like that story. I think I would. My dream is to wear more tie. I wish that I don't really wear suits. I more honestly wear, I guess, jackets.
So what were mom and dad, in order to send you to the hoity-toity school?
Let's start at the beginning.
Well, we can start wherever you like.
Let's start at the beginning. Yes.
What did your dad do?
Okay, my dad was a lawyer.
Okay.
And my mom at the time, I think before she sort of became a more motherly figure, was working on... was actually a producer, which
a producer of film or television?
Of television, of daytime television show. I don't think that was her main thing. I think she was just doing that right around the time. Like, she tried it out for a little,
Soap opera or a daytime game show,
like
kind
a talk
of
show.
Oh, talk show.
And
yeah.
I'm trying to remember the name, but I don't remember, so I'm failing. But mostly. Yeah, I mean, I feel like I would say my parents aren't in show business or whatever, like, because they neither of them were actors or really were in that. So that's what I would say. But yes, my dad was a lawyer, and I learned about that sort of stuff too. But
where did you go to the hoity-toity school? You didn't go there
always. I guess
always
I went.
You did.
Well, I went.
So
to,
they sent you to the hoity-toity school in Los Angeles.
I've never used the phrase hoity-toity until today.
You did before me, though.
I know. It's my fault. I'm saying, but I think I just mean, I don't know.
I know
why.
Exactly what you mean.
It became a
man.
Private school thing where I learned the difference, and at the time, whatever. So yes, but it was at Curtis School first up here, and then to Brentwood School, which was and then. That's how life began.
The listening to Mozart,
right? That
and,
was
and writing about your feelings
right,
about it.
That was a young.
Ultimately,
age.
Is that a good thing?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a real big fan of all this stuff. I feel like I had a great life or whatever. I guess it never occurred to me that was weird or like funny. You know what I mean? Yeah. Which just sounds like the
I mean, I don't
thing.
Find it weird or funny. I think a lot of people would find it normal or.
Right.
Or inquisitive about
right.
the feelings of a young person.
Right, but I see how there's humor behind the fact that, like, we're just sitting there doing whatever, and, I mean, we're all little kids. Or
right, but a lot of the other little kids at the other schools were probably just throwing rocks at each other.
Right.
Or flipping baseball cards or doing
right.
whatever
and
kids
that seems
do,
like
which is
the
fine.
Cool thing to do.
That's
like, I
okay.
I think I should have been throwing more rocks.
Oh, really?
You can probably tell now looking. I mean, yeah, I should have thrown more rocks as a young man.
I don't think so.
Okay, that's very nice.
I think can we both admit that you have, it seems, an approach to life that lots of people would describe as out of the ordinary?
Sure, and I learned that at college mostly, and then from there onward. And I just
you learned that about yourself because you were like that in college and it was occurring to you, I'm not like everyone else?
Like I was very into, like, what are all these things that everyone's into. But, I mean, like, Carpe Diem and all this stuff, and I wanted to be free. And, we were, like, the magic of theater and film, and I feel like I didn't really go to class or anything. And I think that
you just experienced the magic outside of
right. I was just very into, like, making memories and making sure I did everything I could. And then I think that maybe some people registered that, like, as he's not, doing his work or, stuff like that that makes him sort of a...
Believe me, when I'm saying the previous thing that I said,
right.
I mean out of the ordinary.
Right.
I don't mean weird or I don't mean wrong.
No, of course, right.
I mean
right, exactly.
out
but I,
of
and,
the ordinary.
And that could be, whatever, misconstrued, I guess, as like either he's not working hard enough or he hasn't learned about what it means to have to work or... Because
hey.
And so I'm saying right. So, but it never occurred to me that could be an option. Somebody asked me if I donated like a pool to the college because like why wasn't I going to class? And I was like, no, it's because I'm like a free spirit, man. Like I didn't. didn't occur to me, like, oh, yeah. And then I was like, oh, maybe. It did help me leave college, though, because it made me feel like somebody deserved to go there that wanted to go to class or something. Or I don't know if you watch Friday Night Lights, you know, but they're, like, trying really hard to get to college. Like, yeah. It didn't occur to me. I don't know. I just didn't think about college either that much.
Funny thing, Armin, is we are such incredible kindred spirits, as you say these things,
well, there you go.
That a movie of my life is going through my head. And the fact is that – and I don't mean that that Friday Night Lights impression that you make of
right.
You got to work, and right. You got to get into that school, and then right. You got to meet that guy, and then you got to do the thing
right.
Is just absolutely opposite – of anything I've ever done.
Right, right.
And again, it's not a judgment call. It's just saying I'm really different than that, and I think you are too.
Right, yeah.
But were you like that in high school?
Yes. I mean, I think, though, the problem arises whether, like, you know, I am who I am, right? But then also, like, there's, you know, everybody – or, like, we grew up in – anyway, I did in this other era of, like, championing, you know, being different – or something like that, that like has become a meta weird thing. So it's like, it's not, it's almost like a cliche to talk or try and be like, I don't know what the word is.
Were you like that when you were eight? You know, is this a through line of Armin's creative exploration of himself? Or did something happen? Was there an event where you said, I'm just not going to go on this path anymore?
There must have been something. I mean, the thing I can remember most about any sort of concept of life being different or me was like, I'm a kid, my dad, who I would credit with a lot of, how do I say it? Like, he's not, my dad's kind of an old school guy, and he's definitely was like kind of a jock, and he's definitely a very smart, intelligent man. But he, you know, made me watch a lot of like Monty Python and a lot of Mel Brooks or a lot of Woody Allen and stuff when I was younger. And, you know, he's like, read this book, Hunter S. Thompson. It's like, he likes crazy stuff, even though
he's not. So at a very young age, Dad, the straight-laced lawyer
guy,
is giving you this the gonzo journalism of Hunter Thompson.
I feel like he helped, you know, so whatever. And I think that when
So Dad is saying, here, read Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
And so that, and I'm sure I didn't even understand half of why I thought it was funny at the time. But then I remember being in, I guess, fifth grade was when I realized – not everyone here like knows what Monty Python is or something. Mm-hmm, like, it didn't occur to me. And then I think I did a report on it or something, and no one thought it was funny. And I remember being like, oh, this is weird. Like, and then on my birthday, and maybe like in 10th grade, we watched The Graduate or something. Everybody hated it. And I remember being like, okay, so that's weird or something. And it made me – so it manifested itself and like, I know more about comedy than these guys or whatever at first.
Or just the things that I like nobody else seems to like.
Right. And then I was like, oh, so this is old. Or like I don't know. I don't think I watched enough current things. Although that's not true, obviously. I mean, I liked current things, you know, like Ninja Turtles and whatnot. But I mean, I definitely think I didn't know about Full House or something, let's say, for example.
So if you were going really off on your own stuff in high school – and you were really doing your own thing. Like, how did you get into college, or what was that process like? Because I mean, it's just. did you specifically not do well in high school because you were
not,
just dreaming?
I did not do well in high school. I thought of it at the time on purpose. I was, you know, I thought of myself as maybe. I'm sure I was a little ego there. I thought I was a genius or whatever I thought, and I was very into like, let's not do homework and let's be free, and I don't know what, you know, but I think that. Yes, I only applied to like Harvard and Yale and all these things as sort of like this weird joke, I thought. And I think I wrote on the, what's it called, application essay, like, you know, if you want to be part of my life story and my autobiography, you should accept me in your school. No one believed Jesus Christ, or whatever jokes I was making or trying to sound. Anyway, I did not get into any of those schools, obviously. I had like, you know, C's and D's. But I, my family sort of secretly applied me to Emerson College.
And without your knowledge?
Yes. Well, sort of with my knowledge, but I never really knew what that was. I never been to that
to Boston
school.
Or
I went to Boston as a kid, but I never
It's interesting
been to
that mom and dad here in Los Angeles who've sent you to these schools and you're not taking it seriously, but they decide, hey, let's make an application in Boston.
Right. And some people we knew had went there, and I feel like they had – I had to have a talk with the – principal? I don't know what's the headmaster. I was on academic probation my first semester of college, which I already was at high school. I felt like – or they liked some of my films I had made. And anyway, basically that was like I had to sort of get a good grade average or I'd be kicked out of there. But it was like a special circumstances or I don't know how that –
Sure, they let you in.
I got lucky, basically.
Well, you had something to show if you were shown films.
Right, sure. But I mean, I feel like it wasn't like as dramatic as that. They were like, he's an amazing filmmaker. We need him. But, you know, something like that happened.
Look, you were an interesting kid.
Sure. I definitely was interesting.
So probably, I mean, some of these colleges, you know, they'll accept a few interesting kids and see what happens.
Yeah, so it was good. And, you know, we were, I mean, I was, you know, this was not on a scholarship. So, I mean, you know, they accepted it. I mean, I think that... But yeah, and then you know, weird times happened there too. I think it wasn't as cute, I guess, to those professors or whatever. I think film school kind of messed me up a little bit.
What did had you gone to film school before that?
No. I just mean like being there and seeing how like other directors felt about actors.
Oh yeah,
and like how they didn't care as much about whatever. You know, maybe I'm a prima donna, but I have these like visions in my mind of movies and of life and magic and these things.
At that time.
Yeah.
What were those visions?
Well, I did think that I assumed that I would just get a large part like, you know,
as
Godfather.
An actor in a
movie.
Yeah.
Here's the story is that I always wanted to be an actor since I was like second grade, let's say, because I think before then I wanted to be like a plumber because of Super Mario Brothers. But I mean, that was ill-advised. Not that it's not. I wouldn't have been a good plumber. But the point is that and then as you get older, I started to make movies in like 11th grade or older. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And like, I don't know. That was the cooler thing I thought was I want to be like Stanley Kubrick. I want to be a filmmaker. You know
so
what
was
I mean?
This with a big video camera?
Yeah,
or what were
video camera. I made movies at like the school film festival. I mean, these weren't like great. They probably aren't great. Although I think some of them are pretty hilarious.
What were they? Were they kind of, quote, art, unquote,
well,
movies?
Well, that is going to come into question here if we're really delving into that. Because at first, I made this like mockumentary, my first movie ever, and it was about how if I died, and it was like about my legend or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I was like in eighth grade, and that was very well received, I'd say, in terms of the senior kids. I got to go to In-N-Out Burger with them.
Wow,
they thought it was funny. And so then from there, I decided to go into this next movie because that's how I thought of it in my mind. I'm like, my next film, even though clearly it's with a camera. And that was sort of like an ode to like Monty Python, this weird sort of war, weird fantasy sort of movie. I would say Lord of the Rings-esque, but at the time that movie hadn't come out, so I don't know how else to explain it. But that sort of thing. But it was more comedy-based. And then
an absurdist kind of on purpose.
Yes. And definitely nobody liked that. And so then the next year was when I feel like I bloomed into my whatever phase. And so I sort of decided to make like a sequel to that movie, only a much more serious version. And then I started to make like a trilogy, I wanted to say. And it became this like other joke on the joke of that it was a weird movie.
So throughout high school, I mean, you were making a lot of movies.
Sure. Well, not a lot, but they took a long time because one of them was like an hour or so, and that was I stopped making the movie because I liked this girl, and I messed up my whole life because I just cast the girl in the movie because I liked her, and I cast her in my thing, and it was all...
Really, that never happens. It does not happen
it
in Hollywood. Or just
plan. It just was like...
It's a good plan, and but that plan didn't work out.
Well, it did. I mean,
it worked out too well.
Well, not too well. I think I messed up.
Well enough to make you stop making movies.
Well, stop making that movie, which was just... A lot of kids in the, you know, in all the grades were in there. I had a big war scene that was like, you know, at least 50 people in this field, and I realize now that would probably never happen. I don't know if I could get 50 people in a field without paying them. You know what I mean? So there is footage. I never finished the movie, though, because it turned out being like an hour and a half. And
back then, how would you edit these movies?
Well, actually, I got you know, a friend of ours worked at Universal Studios. And so I got to go
so
on an Avid machine.
Are you
like,
kidding
with
me?
With a guy who was like an editor. And I'm sure at the time, I remember, I mean, I guess, yeah, it was somebody we knew, and they helped us do that. And
so you took it into Universal. a friend of your parents or something.
Which was very exciting to me. Right, exactly.
Of course, and they put the footage on an Avid machine, which at that time, people, we have iMovie now.
Right, exactly.
At that time, the Avid machine would have cost $300,000 just for the machine.
I'm sure. And I mean, this guy, I think he was, you know, an editor or something. I mean, he was very, very nice to me and treated me like a human being. But I see how now I'm self-conscious about, I'm sure, being a ninth grader. Could be weird for this guy to sit there and like for
just
me to be like,
having
well, let's
dad
edit
drive
this.
You to Universal.
Like, right. We talked about it. But I mean, it was definitely changed my life as a human being, I think.
How would you say really change your life?
Like, because it obviously all that stuff about like the magic of editing, and when you see that come together and you put the song in there, and it was like, I don't know, I think I learned a lot from that maybe I would have learned later anyway, but I got to do that, and I know how this sounds weird, but yeah, it was very cool.
Doesn't sound weird.
I wish I remembered his name because he was the greatest guy. I want to say Gary, but I realized that it could be weird if I was
wrong. Editor Gary, we thank you.
I just want to say Gary in case we mention him again.
Did you make films at Emerson?
Yes, but that was more of a group effort sort of thing. Well, two things happened at Emerson, I'd say. One is that I met a bunch of guys, including my writing partner Harris, in the comedy world, like where I started to do sketches and stuff like that and perform live shows like that. And
would that happen at the coffee house at school or whatever? They're
yeah,
having
or there
Thursday
was like
night
a theater
sketches.
There, and then we started to get, you know, they were booked at like theaters around Boston and stuff
okay.
like that. But mostly, yeah, it was like in the theaters, like the underground theaters around the school and at the school. And it was like, I don't know. That was like a dream of mine, right? I always thought we'd be like some Monty Python thing, and it didn't occur to me that that was something like sketch comedy or whatever. Like, I forgot about that for a while. I spent so much time wanting to make movies, and I'm a serious actor, even though it was mostly comedic. But I mean, and so then I was like, oh yeah, I love comedy, and I feel like, you know, that was a magical thing. I would have never met those guys, and you know, we're here now in LA, and we do here at UCB, and so it's like a magical thing. And the other thing was this group of guys that we were the film friends or whatever, and we made movies together there too. And I met other guys who loved the same movies as me, and you know, that was like a blooming thing. But one of them is now married in Pennsylvania and has a child, so I feel like it's in theoretics he's busy right now and not moving to Los Angeles to make movies.
No, because so the film group at Emerson has kind of broken up in a while.
Some of them are still here. We're still friends. But I would say until later in life when I could offer them some chance to make a movie.
They're not going to.
But the comedy, I just seem to, whatever, we stayed together more. But it's,
Well, you were coming back. I mean,
I left.
You're from Los Angeles.
Yes.
You lived here.
Right, which is
so when you're out of school, you come back here to this hotbed.
Right.
Of sketches and films.
Right.
And
well, see, I didn't know that. Like, I think as a...
You didn't know that Los Angeles was a hotbed of...
I did. I mean, I went to the Groundlings for, like, my birthday when I was in 10th grade or something like that. I mean, I knew that was cool, but I don't think that I don't know. I didn't know enough about it. I feel like I was very obsessed with making movies, and it just didn't occur to me. I forgot about, you know, whatever, all that stuff that I seemed to come later, that the ideas... I love Larry Sanders' show, you know. Then later in life, I learned about Gary Shandling's entire stand-up and all that.
Right,
stuff.
Right.
I mean, that's an example of what I'm trying to say.
Did you stay at Emerson for a long time?
I stayed for like a year and a half.
Uh-huh.
And then, I felt, you know, there was definitely, I mean, anyway, I loved it or whatever. It wasn't like I didn't like college. I definitely was, I learned about myself as a man, and there was lots of, you know, women and dramas. But yeah, I think that someone deserved to be there because I wasn't really taking it seriously in terms of classes or anything.
So ultimately, your dropping out of college was altruistic.
Well,
it was giving another person an opportunity to learn.
That's what I want to tell myself. Yeah,
I think that's a perfectly reasonable story.
I do think I did get my first commercial ever, like right around that time. And so I think that was filming in Canada. And I don't know, maybe I told you the story already, but I mean, it was definitely a weird moment in the mythology of my life because this girl that I had liked at camp, who I thought I'd never see again in Canada, I was at the college she was at, and there she was filming this commercial. And
she was filming the same commercial
that you... No, I mean, she was just there.
Oh, she was there,
but happened to be at the same exact college that I thought I'd never see her again. She's from Canada. And, you know, the commercial itself was a very big Rushmore ripoff commercial.
Uh-huh.
So it was also sort of symbolic, I feel like, in a joke.
So you were playing
sense.
Like a Jason Schwartzman it was kind basic, of a figure?
Right, which yeah. was just, it already had been my whole life. It was like, you're like this kid, and you're like this, you know, and when the movie came out. And also, I mean, triply weird because, like, Bottle Rocket had come out, and he was, like, my favorite director at the time. So I was really excited to see the movie anyway, and I didn't know it was going to, like, ruin my whole life, make me realize I'm unoriginal and that other people like Cat Stevens and that I'm, like, you know what I mean? Like, it just, you know, people left messages on my parents' machine. There's this movie about Armin.
But a lot of people like Cat Stevens before
that's
that.
What I'm saying. But
I mean, have
not,
you seen Harold and Maude?
No, exactly, of course. But I'm saying in my life up to that point, I didn't know anyone else.
Right.
Seen Harold and Maude.
Did you actually see Harold? Yeah, that's an interesting you know what I mean? Question because I think that of there are a generation of guys, and not that they model themselves after it, but that Bud Cort
yeah.
in Harold and Maude really.
Oh, yeah.
Really, a lot of people identified with that character.
That I saw that after I saw Rushmore, I guess. But I was
you saw Harold and Maude after Rushmore. That's
right.
an interesting.
But I was very into The Graduate, which I feel like is another sort of. I feel like those two are related in my mind. Harold and Maude and The Graduate, mm-hmm. and people say that because I think they're both well these dark haired guys like dealing with their lives. So I feel like that. I don't know. It must have been subconscious because I don't know. Later in life did I start to be like, oh, this is weird. Like I clearly idolize this or whatever. I mean, it had a lot to do with the Beatles, I'd say, too, I think. I think they're – not to sound really dumb, but they're very influential in my life.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what I mean? Like in a deep, profound way that not just like
– What do you mean by
they,
that?
You know, I want to be like they're in my veins, every word I speak, everything I do. But I feel like – That is true.
Now you're a very we must admit you're a very young person to have had an experience of the Beatles that is so deep because your experience of the Beatles came after they weren't
sort of
no longer a group.
Is the lucky part in some weird way. Like well this is a weird thing where because you know now or whatever movies we watch of a director I can't even imagine like waiting for a new Beatles album to come out, right? And then to judge it, like you judge something based on the last movie that guy made as opposed to like I grew up, a lot of those Woody Allen movies were made already, so I'm just watching them and looking at them. You know what I mean? Like, and that, I think that goes for the Beatles or I don't know. Like I can't imagine. Yeah, I don't know. I mean I think there's also a thing where in my mind it was my childhood was a lot about the Beatles. And then as like I would say adult, I'm making quotation marks as like a 10th grader or 11th grader. Like there's a double meaning between like listening to that as a kid and then hearing that as you know a young adult and feeling the same emotions and yeah I don't know they had
very
it all right.
powerful references to you
very powerful like very deep and very much like they understand everything and you know something happened there I would say with those four guys but I feel like this would be weird if I talked at length about if the Beatles are good but yes.
I don't think it's weird. I think you're allowed to say what you want.
Right, but you know what I mean. Like, yes, they're good. They're very famous. But I think they're underrated, I would say, to some people. I feel that way anyway, that, you know, they're looked at differently because of their popularity or something. I wish people really got in there with those guys, but, and some people do, and obviously everyone does. But I also learned some life lessons, and this girl in seventh grade I was in love with. She was the first girl I ever met that liked the Beatles. So I assume that meant she was amazing, but she's, you know, maybe she's not amazing.
What's your
like
favorite
that.
Beatles song?
Song? Okay, that's a great question. Obviously, I have no real answer, but I would, if I had to answer, I would say Rocky Raccoon. And I would say that because of whatever.
I think you would have to admit that that's an unusual choice for a favorite Beatles song.
Okay, right. And I guess that goes either under – I have, you know, this mentality of whether – I don't know why it means so much to me. I sang it at camp,
uh-huh.
and camp was a very big, important thing in my life. We haven't even talked about that yet, but those were also back east camps. We'll talk about – yeah, I would say – sure. I mean, I love every song, and I think that – my first instinct, everyone's going to say Strawberry Fields Forever or something and some weird – I have no idea my favorite song. I mean, it's a very hard question. But if I had to say it represented whatever me, I would say that Rocky Raccoon was – is very important to me for some reason uh-huh. in my mind or whatever psychedelic spiritual thing that is. That's what that is.
Uh-huh. What, did you like Harold and Maude when you first saw it?
I loved it. Yeah, it was like, yeah. I mean, I felt like, yeah. I mean, it's weird, you know, when you feel like you, I don't know what that is. You feel like you relate to something because you're like, oh, I, you know, I would have thought of that. Or I, you know, it felt like that was just a kindred thing. Like I wasn't, I may have seen it too late to be initially mind blown, but it was like, that's one of my favorite movies now. Yeah.
So when I was first here in LA, when I first moved here, and I was working at the Comedy Store there on Sunset.
Right.
They have a main room there that sees like 400 people.
Right,
it's
right,
a
right.
really big room.
Right.
And one of the first things, back then, the comedy show was there on Monday night for improv and groups.
Right.
And then it was dark throughout the week. And then Friday and Saturday.
That's crazy.
Friday and Saturday were comedy shows. The rest of the week, they just couldn't sell tickets.
Wow.
Because that comedy boom hadn't happened.
Right.
You know,
that's
there wasn't
crazy.
Rush. It was Sunset Boulevard.
Right,
but still, you know, not quite enough people to have shows Tuesday, Wednesday,
that's
Thursday,
insane.
Or Sunday. So people would come and do a deal with the Comedy Store where they would do a show. The first show I saw was Bud Cort.
That's crazy.
Who, and Bud had put together, I don't know how to describe it, but it was an unusual show. It literally had song and dance.
Yeah.
He sang songs. He told jokes kind of about E.T. He did unusual things like readings and things.
Right. Yeah,
Like in watching, I mean, I liked Harold and Maude, and clearly the guy was a great actor and everything, but it was a very unusual show.
Right, right.
But it attracted every person in LA who was of that sort of thinking, in the mood for an unusual show, huge fan of Bud Cort.
Right.
He saw Harold and Maude.
Right.
So what a collection
of
out of the ordinary humanity every night to see coming into the Comedy Store.
Love that.
And it worked. I mean, it was great. And they loved it.
Yeah, no,
they loved it. And I just remember watching it and thinking, well, not resenting it. I mean, celebrating it, but just thinking, boy, wouldn't that be great?
Right.
When you have 400 people who are just there saying like, we just love you and what you're about. So you just come and do your thing.
That's the ultimate.
And
dream.
We're just going to support what you want to do. And if it's singing a song, great, sing a song. And if you want to read us a story, sure.
Yeah, that's a dream world. That's like a goal you could, you know, strive to, or me, anyway.
Were you a camp counselor, or they sent you away to a camp?
No, I was a camper.
And mom and dad sent you far.
Yes, but it was definitely, but that changed me the most, and to the point of like, I think it's important for everyone to go to camp if you want to go. I didn't even want to go, so just keep that in mind, but I mean, I went to a bunch of different camps, but I mean, you know, and then later in life, I had Camp Armin at my house, my backyard, because I was so obsessed with camp. And
you brought friends or something?
Well, I wanted to have like a camp for adults, because I feel like right now I can't go to camp, and that like bothers me. And I feel like I want us to all be friends forever and live in a circle of friendship, and, you know, we tell our feelings and do stuff like that. So that was later in life.
Did that work?
It did for that 1 week. I'd say it worked.
It was a week long.
Yeah, and there was activities.
How many people came?
Camp Ramen play, like 32 or something. It wasn't like an insane amount, but you know,
hey,
everyone was sleeping in the backyard.
32 people sleeping in your backyard.
Yes,
for a camp that lasted a week.
Yes, and it was pretty great. And we had T-shirts made, and there's still a lot of them. And yeah, I mean,
people talked about their feelings. Did they listen to music in order to? I mean, I'm not even making fun. Like back in the school, what was it? Was it a campfire at night and people would talk about their feelings?
You know what? That's interesting. I probably should have figured out how to make a campfire. No, I'm very into talk about your feelings. I had life dinners a lot of times that I invented.
What's a life dinner?
Things in high school where like a group of friends would come to the dinner and you'd have assignments. And everyone would come, let's say, you know, you'd write something about what happened in your childhood, or you write about someone you know. And I want the friends to know each other. And I don't know why I'm so into that or whatever, but I.
So what would you write with a pen, like a letter of this is something that happened to me and I would just like you to read it?
The life dinner was more like I wasn't in charge. It was like a different group of friends and my main group of friends. So I don't even know what I was doing or why they agreed to this looking back now. But at the time it was about like, you would write, let's say you would write what your favorite song meant to you or whatever, something that, you know, I now hopefully now I think of better questions. But I mean,
they all learned about each other. And then you tell each other how you feel about each other, and then everyone, you know, was like hugging by the end, and it was like kind of beautiful. So you were and remain a sort of a
designer of happenings.
Yes, that's very true. In fact, I've been accused of lots of things about that. I'm very into either with girlfriends or whatever. You know, it's, you know, are you trying to play God, or you're trying to create moments that are from movies that don't exist in real life or whatever. I'm guilty of that, and I definitely want to create.
In what ways do people think that you're playing God?
Well, you know, our group of friends, the initial group, which I guess we tried to call ourselves the Fellowship, as they say, which is Lord of the Rings inspired, which is really cool. You know, at some point, or whatever, if I fancy myself the leader, then I'm sure eventually that means backlash. And I got some of that, and I learned about myself and friendships and life. And I was, you know, I'm really, I like planning events and parties, and I want, like, I'm into good vibes and everyone being together.
What's, I don't know. What do you think the backlash is? Is the backlash, hey, I came to a happening, but I think I shared too much, or I think you're asking too much of me?
Yeah, I think it's like, I mean, whatever. It's partly my fault. I'm sure I made a lot of jokes about that, you know, like, you know. Because I think I fancy myself, maybe I was a little aloof, or like I'm not a part of whatever the human drama that's going on.
So you wouldn't?
Oh, of course I would. But for me to share my feelings, and almost someone explained it as like not exciting, because like that's all I'm doing, or I talk too much, or that's my way of becoming, dealing with whatever nervousness or whatever. Like everyone does things differently, how to handle whatever. I feel like my goal, like I was saying, in life would be to be myself, right? That's what you want to get to, that goal. And I guess acting or doing that stuff, somehow my mind brings me closer to that, like doing something weird on stage or whatever, which I feel like is the natural.
It brings you closer to your true self.
Yeah, because that's my natural feeling, is I want to be like Johnny Carson said in that documentary, which made me kind of blow my mind, but he was like, you know, I went on stage because I actually was shy and nervous, and then when I went on stage, you know, I could control the room, and it was something. And I was like, I wondered if subconsciously I was shy, because I mean, I'm very not shy, but I mean, I wonder, that made me feel like weird about that. It made me think like, okay, so maybe that's part of, like, I'm much happier like after we've done a scene or something on a thing, because I feel like that's when we're being ourselves, when I'm being the character and doing the jokes. I don't know how to have small talk that well. I got to figure out how to do that more, you know what I mean? But if someone asks me how I am,
You mean be phony?
Sure, be phony, but I mean,
you
also
gotta learn
feel
that
like,
in order to get by.
Sure, but I also, I guess you could argue that that's like professional, maybe. Like, I don't need to be, I don't know, it's a catch-22 about whether or not, like, you know, because you get jaded, and I'm very much more cynical than I was, you know what I mean? And I try not to do that. But, like, for example, you being in here right now, us having this podcast, forces me to not be jaded, because this is, in my mind anyway, it's very exciting. Like, it's an exciting thing. Or if I look at it in the context of my life or as a 12-year-old or whatever, like, this is very exciting. You know what I mean? So I have to keep to be with you. And it's an honor, whatever, to that you would even be in my house when we're having this conversation is exciting. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, it makes sense.
You know, or whatever, because I was, you know, a fan once, and now I am a.
But we've known each other now for
right. That's
quite
what I'm saying.
A while.
Of course, exactly. So I'm trying to say. So that's my point. It's like, whether at what point do I calm down about that? But it's like I need to either force myself to remember being a, you know, 12-year-old and having dreams, and then like, hey, well, that's true. Like, when I work with anybody that I'm a fan of, then I make this joke like, well, now we're friends, so I can't. It's not exciting, you know what I mean? But secretly,
so this is dangerous. I have no idea what area I'm going into. But what was your first experience of me?
Well,
in order
to
make you have this feeling,
sure. Well, I guess the obvious answer would be it's a little film called Back to the Future, and that definitely was my first experience of you. But I guess. Which is great for me to get off my chest. But yeah, that definitely was a large part of my life. I had a tape, as they say, recorded it off the TV, like a cassette tape. I listened to the movie in the car. So I memorized the whole thing. And
can you do some for me?
I definitely think that's like your nightmare. I can't tell. Like, I knew that. Like, I feel like you've had enough of this your whole life to have Armin talk.
I asked you, didn't I?
I know,
you?
But I mean, I
asked
like,
you, thinking in the back of my head, like, oh, I think you might be getting into. But no, it's fine. No, I'm right. Totally.
And
cool
then
with
I, you know, explored more after, obviously, and stuff like that. And I learned about your stand-up, and I learned about all this stuff. And I guess I don't know everything, but I mean, in my mind. I remember thinking, oh, whatever, this is going to sound too crazy. But I remember thinking, like, oh, yeah, I want to cast him. I wanted to do that. It's like what I thought.
When you were a kid.
Yeah, because I was, like, assuming that. And so just something about that is just exciting, right? And so it's like, I mean, yeah, I definitely, yeah, there's a poster of it over there. I tried to hide it out of the way. But anyway, the point is that.
Well, you have a poster of what, the movie?
Yeah.
That's usually where?
It's usually right over here.
Right in the dining room.
But it is. I put it in the bathroom. I figured if you went in there, you would have seen it. But
yeah.
It's a subtle thing.
Uh-huh. How's it turned out, knowing me in person?
It's great. I actually think you're much, not much smarter, but you're very...
Different than I am in the movies?
Sure, yeah. No, but I mean, Freaks and Geeks stole my thunder there. I felt like that was my plan because you were really good in that, too, and that was like a whole other... thing, because I was a fan of that separately, and
yeah,
then
sure.
There you were, and I was like, oh my god, and blah blah blah, and I think that yeah, they stole my idea.
That darn Judd Apatow.
Yeah, Judd.
Paul Feig.
I don't know what I'm saying.
Paul Feig, we're after you,
but
Feig.
Yeah, no, I think that you. I think you're very smart. I think you constantly have a good understanding of all of it, and you told me that thing about you got to enjoy. The performance, because as an actor, you have no control over what take they use, over what happens. So I got to enjoy the actual
thing. The
things
that you have control over.
Right, which is like
the
moment.
Which is that moment right now. Right.
And that's something that, even though it sounds like, of course I shouldn't, it did sort of affect me. So thank you for that.
Sure.
Hey, guys.
Are you still having fun acting?
Yes. I just had a ton of fun recently. I did this thing, I don't know if you know, it's called Burning Love, and it's like this, it's a parody of like The Bachelor and stuff, and it's the Ken Marino and his wife, it's the Wet Hot American Summer guy. I don't know if you ever saw any of those guys, David Wayne and those guys, they were the State, this comedy sketch troupe.
The State?
That was, they were, when I was younger, that. Okay, so yeah, anyway, I'm huge fans of them.
I worked on a show with Ken Marino, I think once,
oh, there
a long
you go.
Time
okay,
ago.
Right. And it was his thing, and whatever. So, like, that was very exciting, too. Do we go?
No, I'm just looking at the time,
okay.
Because I don't wear a watch. I mean, I usually wear a watch, but now, see?
The world changed.
I gave up the tie.
Right,
and now
the
I'm
watch.
Giving up the watch.
We got phones, and things have changed.
Oh, that's true. Nobody wears a watch anymore.
I know. It's rough, although I'm not good at that.
No, I just didn't want to, you know, take up too much of your time.
No, I'm fine.
But
I'm
when
free.
Did you start... Did you start by writing comedy and stuff when you were first? You're out here, you're at a mom and dad's house, and you're saying,
right.
"Okay, I've got to make
we're
a living."
About when I moved back, or when I was like,
you know, when
kid.
you moved back and you were, you know,
right.
You're an adult now.
Yes.
Like I just wondered, did you
it was
start
actor?
It was actor. I'm auditioning for commercials.
Well, yeah. What happened is that at film school, I realized I was just writing movies for me to act in and directing things for me to act in, and it was all about acting. So I had to be honest with myself, and then like. That's like my truest passion at my core
is the
acting.
Uh-huh.
Is acting and writing is a large part of it because I believe everyone, you know, is best at writing for themselves, or maybe they're not, or I probably should figure out how to not do that. But you know, I think so. That's how it all started, and I came back and I'd already written a bunch of movies, you know, when I was like younger, and so I just was keeping doing that. And I think because the commercial had come out right at the time that I was looking to like try and start acting.
The commercial in Canada,
yeah.
Like the Jason Schwartzman
right.
Kind of
correct.
Thing.
And it came out right on the around the time that I was looking to get like a manager. So I feel like it was a serendipitous thing, and maybe I didn't know that much about how to do this at the time. And I'm sure that had I just come later, it would have been more difficult to I wouldn't have anything. I mean, that was a good reel or whatever, because I guess the commercial is long or whatever, and it played in some movie theaters, which I was embarrassed about because I didn't want to be in front of the movies and like, you know, the commercials before the movies. But that's what it was. So we went to the movie theater and we saw it. my friends and I, we were excited. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Yeah. And the director of that commercial is Jason Reitman, who's now very successful. Mm-hmm. So there's also something, you know, funny about that. That, like, at the time he was, like, kind of, I was like, get, you know, he was showing it around for his life. So it, like, helped me out, I think, by accident or something.
Did you start working a lot?
No, but I definitely, I mean, I've worked, you know, little by little. I don't think that, I mean, yeah, clearly, obviously not, otherwise everyone would know who I am.
Not necessarily.
But,
not,
you know,
necessarily.
Well, you know what I mean. But I mean, I am, yeah, my first movie I was cut out of completely. It was this independent movie called Super, Michael Rapaport. That was my first scene in any movie. And then I got to be in that movie School for Scoundrels, which was Todd Phillips. And looking back, there's like a bunch of us. That were, it was just like classmate number 14 or whatever. We were there every day because it was like takes place in the class. So it was like I experienced like being on a movie set without really having any lines or whatever. So I like learned a lot of things. Like it was cool. But also everyone in that class, it's very funny. If you look at it, they're all like very successful now.
Do you usually play people close to yourself? Or have you found yourself playing
a
character
question.
That is outside of yourself?
That's a good question. I would say, you know, well, I would say nothing I've played has been like completely out of the ordinary. But I definitely don't think I mean, on the Sarah Silverman program, I sort of got to be myself because I just got to be weirdo.
You approach it in a quirky way.
Right. And she sort of let, I mean, they named the character Armin eventually. Mm-hmm. It was sort of a joke. But I mean, I would say that, no, I haven't played anything that's truly myself because, I guess it's more like it's not hard for me to play a weird guy or a guy who is nervous or something like that or something. I don't know, but I would say no one has been, you know, like on Zach Stone, I would say I'm nothing like that guy except for I could see how someone could argue that I am like that.
But certainly with dialect,
right?
With look,
I was
with
more your like approach Zach Stone, to a, I'd say.
Yeah, with your approach to just being verbal. I mean, you're, the manner in which you talk.
Right, right. That's never happened.
Is not different, or you know, you always look and sound like Armin.
Right.
But with a character with all different circumstances
in
their life. Trying
to bring yourself to the role, but I mean, you know, right. I've thought about this because especially with that, I feel like I was probably a lot like Zach Stone. I was more like that person. I had another friend that I probably made. So I learned about myself, I think, from that. Yeah, that's what I'd say. From Greg, the character from our show, I'm saying I feel like I learned. I've treated a bunch of my friends like that, maybe. So maybe I learned to not, you know.
Zach Stone is going to be famous, buddy. Is going to be on.
I know. I don't know if we're supposed to talk about that, but I thought
we could talk about
there.
That. I'm not sure if this will be out. I hope it's up before May 2nd. But May 2nd, 10:30.
Yeah, 10:30.
And we shot 12 of them.
Oh,
together.
Yeah, rock and roll.
And the reason why I wanted to talk to you because you always impressed me on the set with everyone did because, as you know, it's a scripted show.
Right.
But it was also with moving cameras and the manner in which it was shot. It was very open to a lot of different improvisations.
Correct.
And Bo Burnham, who stars in the show, was very open to that.
Right.
And he was doing all sorts of crazy things. And it was up to everyone to just support that and react to it and just kind of keep it alive.
Yeah.
So that was a very interesting work environment and working with you. But I was also impressed with you as a person. Like at lunch, because of your tendency to make things real in a way and surreal in a way.
Well,
because your reality, like as we've talked about, and I'm not dissing it. I'm saying I'm so close to that reality. It's weird.
I know that's how.
But everyone is talking about one thing, and you start speaking about. The lettuce or the farm worker that picked the lettuce that's in your salad.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking
And how
about.
He is close to your heart while you're eating that salad, which I think is a beautiful thing. As we both know, it's not going to get you a job in a company in a cubicle.
Right.
To me, that's a cause of great celebration.
Sure.
To some people, that's a great tragedy.
Yeah.
But you were always open to sharing your feelings about things and your experiences.
Yeah, no, that's true.
And you're still a very experienced – I mean, you're out there in order to have experiences.
Right, right. That's my
– went to the thing. You were a, you're a Burning Man guy.
Right, like Bonnaroo, yeah.
Bonnaroo, I'm sorry.
Correct. No, I just
– those kinds of large –
yes. Although now I feel like I would be – it would be hell on earth more than it was then, but yes. I can't imagine – I don't know why. I just feel like
You were just a guy to get in the car and go
right.
to the gigantic, vibrant,
and all
whatever
my friends
hippie,
and I met new people
thing.
And I was in strangers and I don't remember. Now I'm like, where am I going to go to the bathroom? I'm going to – it's like a whole – that's where my mind is at with that. But we're supposed to go on a camping trip, a bunch of my old friends, this year, which sounds like my dream come true. But it just – like they want to go camping outside, and I can't tell you how that is freaking me out, but I feel like I gotta go because I said I was the leader, so I gotta.
Now, you go. Please, if you would, and I don't, you know, we talked about it at lunch,
okay,
and
yeah.
I really don't mean it in a denigrating way, but you actually performed a marriage.
Correct. That's correct. That's correct.
Now, how did you get the?
Well, what's very crazy is I've done it twice now, so we could.
So
one was a marriage where I was in. And the other was one that I performed. So
how do you get the paperwork to do marriages?
Right. Well, let's be clear on that. Okay. There was no paperwork involved in my Bonnaroo wedding. That was
That was
spiritual wedding. The point is that I got the humor is that there was a bunch of strangers and we had a wedding ceremony and I was drunk or other things. Inebriated.
Okay, you were not all there.
So I would say that's more.
See, I didn't know that because you told me you performed a wedding.
That's a different thing. I performed the wedding in Pennsylvania for my friend.
Oh, okay.
And that I was the whatever it's called officiant.
But you didn't pour stuff on yourself in Pennsylvania.
No, those are two different events.
Okay, all right. I'm just
and maybe we're confusing the two. But
no, I don't think so.
Okay, but I mean, definitely one was a marriage. That was not probably legally binding, but spiritually,
yes.
In theory, it was binding for that minute.
But you poured lemonade on yourself in order to consummate the marriage.
That was those are two different events. The lemonade pouring was based on my realization that lemonade was like a universal important thing. And that is the thing that may have been most induced of...
Of not being all there.
Sure.
And just going,
that
hey,
was
man.
Probably the classic...
That was a mistake.
Armin finally did that. You know, because I'm accused of that a lot.
Of doing
like,
the one
drunk
thing
or something?
That's. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Are you this? Are you on acid right now? I'm like, no, I'm not. But that one time I was, so I see why that is very cliche for me to act strange like that. But
did
yes.
you, at the end of that whole event, mm-hmm. did you feel that it was normal? Or did you go, once you did the whole lemonade, did you feel at one point like,
yeah
I think I've gone one
not
step
that.
Too far?
At that point, I think I was proud to, you know, I was surprised that it happened. Like, I was, like, you're out there searching for a crazy story, and then it happened for real was almost happy to me. I would say this one friend of mine, we were in some subway on the way back, and I remember he was looking at me like he thought I'd lost my mind, and I remember being like, oh boy, am I crazy? Do I look crazy? And I remember, you know, whatever, how Paul McCartney must have felt, I'm just kidding, but when he was like, you know, he didn't want to take that stuff. He was the last person to try that because he was very much like, your life's going to be changed. Your brain's altered, you know, and I feel like I don't know. I feel like it's...
Paul McCartney right?
I don't know. I think I think it benefited all of them. I think that... The thing about the Beatles, what I feel like is different than everyone else and why that they maybe got to be the best on some separate thing was that they got to be famous first and then they tried like experimenting with drugs or something. But like... So imagine experimenting with drugs and then having an entire studio to do all that stuff. You know what I mean? Like, this is some scientific theory I had or whatever, but I was like, most people, you know, you try that stuff, then you grow older, then you do your thing. You know what I mean? And I feel like that was a lucky, I don't know, we watched them grow. You know what I mean? And so, like, that's something cool that I don't know. Not that everyone, no one, you know, drugs are bad, but I mean, I think that spiritually they can be used for good. I don't know. It sounds like I'm obsessed with drugs, but I'm not. But you know what I mean.
I'm not sure I agree that spiritually they can
right.
be used
well,
for good.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
I think we separate on that one, but I
right.
think that
well, I'm saying they can be. They're usually not, I would say. That's why they're bad. But I would say, in theory, like whatever, George Harrison called it a shortcut to meditation or whatever. But you know what I mean.
I think the evidence, I don't know. I think the evidence of spiritual maturity is probably keep loving people and stay with your wife or fix that thing.
Well, no, that's
take
true.
Take care of your kids. That seems really spiritually strong.
I would say
to go home and take care for your children.
I'm going to go ahead and
not
call
to
it a
be
people
spiritual
thing.
Together.
I'll just call it a people thing. I think that nothing makes you better or worse. You are who you are, and I think that people will confuse that. Like, if I do this, you know what I mean? Like, there's a bunch of horrible people who are horrible that take drugs and they don't exist. You know what I mean? Or there's nice people who have and they're great. So I would say it has nothing to do with that particular thing. You're right. Yeah. I'd say most of all, stay away from that stuff, kids. I mean that. I really mean I know it sounded like you know what I mean?
That was good. That was a good public service announcement.
You know what I mean?
But
I just didn't want to put the negative connotation on it. Like, I don't feel like that made me who I am or whatever. If I'm telling a funny story about that, I feel like there's a – you know what I mean.
Right, right. I just think in my life I've seen an awful lot of really getting it together with either drinking or drug use, and some other dude is driving their kids to school.
Right, exactly.
And I don't think you're as together as you're telling me you are.
Right, well, that's completely – well, there you go. That's a whole separate thing, though. I haven't had –
no, you haven't
have
had
kids.
That experience or done that. You know, I mean it in a grand
scale. Right, right. That's why I'm like, okay, so yeah, it's a tricky philosophical argument that I was – okay, right. So I agree with you.
Excellent.
Okay, thank God. You know what I mean? But I mean – I don't know. You know, I'm a spiritual guy. Like, I believe in – I want to believe in –
what do you believe in? What do you believe in?
I want to just believe in some magical thing, and whether that's – just the idea, like the fact that you're here, that's a magical thing. Or the fact, or whatever, or maybe we make meaning up. Maybe I just made it up because.
Is your life, let's say, something where you can ultimately find some answers? Or for you, when you're exploring these mysteries, do they just get more mysterious and your life is a celebration of the mystery?
Man, that's a tough question, but I would say you see, I think that how do I put this? I'm trying to say, I'm concerned that life is what we make up in our minds. I don't know if the concern is the right word, but so like that's what I've been dealing with. Like, in theory, I don't live in the jungle and don't have to kill bears or whatever to get my food. Obviously those are bears aren't in the jungle, but you know what I mean, or whatever, just horrible things. And so then I freak out about that. I'm like, what am I doing? And then, you know, I have guilt about it. And then I don't know, like, it's crazy to me that there's such, you know, all these religions and all these things, and I'm just it's like the answers I'm looking for, which I feel like are a very big part of my thing or who I am, it's like I'm starting to be concerned that
they don't exist.
Right, that there is no answer, and that in theory any meaning I bring to my life is my own doing, or like, because you could, you know, people are very much into arguing that nothing matters and that life is, you know, whatever. So it's like our choice whether we want to be a good person or not based on, I'm not even sure why, you just want to be, you know. Or you just
so
wanna,
why is that?
And I don't know, because then I'm like, man, when I die, are people going to remember me this way? I'm like, well, but I'll be dead, so will I care? Or, you know, there's a catch-22 between, like, I want to do everything I need to do because I'm going to only live once, and making sure you don't do things recklessly. Recklessly?
But the caring that you show to people,
yeah,
the love that you have, yeah, for people, I mean, that's...
It's based on...
Isn't that a reality? Is that a reality?
Well, that's what
is
I'm wondering.
Is this table under our hands?
That's what I'm wondering, because I feel like I'm very... Like, I'll get emotional out of the blue, you know, or whatever, with Bo or whoever, like, just because I can't believe we're here, we're doing this, or... And then I see how someone else is like, whatever, who cares? And I see that could be an option, and I don't know why... Yeah, see, I don't know. I'm a little concerned that it could be just...
That the cynic could be right.
Yeah, I'm very anti-cynicism, and yet it's creeping in, you know, every day. More and more it creeps in there, tries to take over. And it makes sense either way. But I feel like everyone here on this planet is secretly not a cynic. You know, we all want something great to happen and magical. And so when it does, it feels magical. Or when you fall in love, it feels magical. And I, but of course, looking back, I'd be like, oh man, all those relationships were horrible. And I'm psychotic for, you know, caring so much. But
is that, is morality, is morality just an illusion? Is it based on nothing?
I know.
Did we as lucky chimps with iPads just decide, well, it's probably better to have things nice for people and to be nice rather than...
Yeah, I got to believe that has to do with just like being just whoever, two cavemen being like, well, we shouldn't kill each other. Let's hang out because I don't know what like...
But it's not based in any... It's not tied to a rock anywhere. It's just a thing that people decide.
People can tie it to, you know, religion or the set of rules are good. You know what I mean? Like, but I also see why I, you know what I mean? Like, if there's a tragedy, like why I would run and help someone.
Yeah. It just seems to me
others.
Like if there is no, if morality is just a figment of our imagination.
Right.
It's a construct that we've decided to build. In like little scaffolding around our hearts.
Okay, right. Theoretically.
Then I just think if you could get away with it, you should rob a bank.
Right. That's my point.
Because if you're kind of stupid if you don't.
Right. Well,
because it doesn't mean nothing. It's just
I
money.
Know. Well, that's where you draw the line with like this idea of, you know, you only live once and do unto others. I mean, there's like a joke about the social contract, or I don't know if it's a joke, but it felt like a joke. We're like, we just sort of agreed because it just – we're all trying to live and everyone's trying to be happy. I mean, it just it is scary. I mean, you could truly – I'm surprised by like why there isn't – you could argue why isn't there total just chaos. You know what I mean? It has to do with – I don't know. Maybe I've watched too many movies too, though, but I feel like that also caused me to assume that my life's supposed to be a certain way, or you're supposed to do right things because you – I mean, that's just how I grew up or how I think of many people did. But you watch people, mean people, and you didn't like them. So you rooted for the good guys, and then you learn from these lessons. Or the modern myths of American culture are movies, I think, in the way that like kids were taught about myths and like Greek or like, you know, even Native American cultures. I sound like a whatever. You know what I mean? Like you were taught lessons about life through stories, and I don't feel like there's that many of them anymore. You know, Star Wars, I guess, could be an example of that. Or like, it was like an American thing or something. And sorry, and we were talking about social constructs. And I'm just like, I feel bad because I don't want to say there should be anarchy or there should be just whatever. But I mean, do you think, I guess my question is, if there's something deeper, like in the human heart, like we want to be nice, or like, what is that? I'm, you know, because in animals, it's about their kids.
Well, mostly. I think that there's something under everything.
Right.
Or else it would be chaos. I think that when people do something wrong, they know.
Oh, I believe that too.
They know that it's wrong.
But
with a different thing than watching The Matrix. From a different thing than watching a John Wayne movie.
Well, of course.
I think they know that it's wrong. But so what is that? Yes, that's
because
the question.
There is a glorification, though, where I'm like, you know, especially in the Old West, or like, you know, the bandit, he's free in the way that I'm not free. And so, like, I know why that's cool. I also know why that's bad, you know, or why I don't want to kill people and I don't want to do that because that's bad. Quote me on
right.
that. Sorry. Yeah.
I think it's great. No, I think it's a fascinating search that you're on.
Yeah, I just...
And I think it would be interesting to talk to you in 10 years. I think you're an intellectually honest person.
Yeah.
And I think you should,
it's like...
Keep going.
It's just like every... I feel like whatever this generational thing is a... It's harder to be earnest or harder to be... believe in stuff. Or maybe not. Maybe there's younger... kids who I feel like do believe in that, but whatever, my people this generation, it feels weirder too. I don't know, you know, I think that because we live longer, there's a lot more heartbreak. I feel like in theory I would have been married if this was the 50s already, and so maybe there's something to that where like now because of that we
which
end up,
tears at the fabric of your belief that there's something underlying.
Sure, or the human referring to mostly love. Let's say, for example, I mean, I think that it makes it so we're forced to like rip our hearts out and have these breakups. I feel like more so than other people did in the past, because I'm assuming that, I mean, I guess that's not true. It could be just a dumb thing I'm saying, but
I think it might be,
You know, we don't have, you know.
But without trying to be being harsh about it, but I mean, a society of narcissists
isn't correct.
Looking for a relationship.
Correct.
They're looking for a mirror.
And so, yeah,
so
we're told
that
we're special.
It's hard to find a mirror.
Right.
You have to, I think.
That's a good way to put it. Like, I think we were told, I don't know, whatever this generation, we were told we're very special. I'm clearly a product of that. I mean, I'm clearly like everyone, you know, so it makes sense that people are having harsh, humbling realities when the world doesn't care about you, you know. I think Chris Webber said that, NBA player, and he was talking to the younger kids, like, you got to do it for yourself, and nothing is owed to you, you know what I mean, even though it seems like it would be. Like, if I'm a good person, good things should happen. But in theory, that's not true. And so that's like a weird, I mean, unless you're talking about the reward is in myself and being a good person is its own reward. And now I look like I'm only doing good things for karmically or whatever thing. But you know what I mean? I think that, I like what you said, people of narcissists, like that's probably the good way to put it. It's like that stuff when they're giving out trophies to every kid. It's like I think in theory it'd probably be better to give the trophy to the person who's the best, and then people would strive to be the best, as opposed to we all got trophies, so who cares? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I read about that. I don't know if that was I don't know what example that is.
Well, what are you working on right now?
Well, currently Harris and I are writing this script we sold.
Excellent.
And hopefully it will be, you know, the Huckleberry Finn of this generation. I feel like it's about a lot of what we're talking about here, so I feel like that's, I gave away a lot of the feelings of that movie here. That's the main thing that I'm working on. We're going to go to New York and work on that because they're
excellent.
It's exciting.
And you've got Zack Stone is going to be famous, yes. Which is probably, if it comes out, this comes out after May 2nd, the smash
mega hit.
International
yes.
wonder, and Zack Stone is going to be famous.
Check out Bernie Love at, it's on airing on E! Season 1, but I'm in season 3, which is on the internet currently.
And how could people find you on the internet?
At my Facebook, I would say, or on my Twitter, which is Armin Weitzman, at both of those.
Twitter's
things.
Armin Weitzman.
At Armin Weitzman. ArmenWeitzman. Not that I'm very good at it. And my Facebook, I would say, is my website. I don't know. Maybe I should get a website, but I don't have one. But I post a lot of songs on there if you want to hear some cool tunes.
Well, as I said, Armin, it's always a joy to talk to you. You and I would end up next to each other at the lunch table, and I found it always fascinating, illuminating.
Same
We'd have
with you.
Very interesting discussions.
We had the Dr. Pepper. I don't know if you remember. That's how
I don't remember
met.
The Dr. Pepper, but
the first thing you ever said to me was about the. I said I got Dr. Pepper, and you asked me if I was from Texas. I said no. You explained I was from Texas, and later on, you were talking to a bunch of other people, and I came over and I opened Dr. Pepper, and I was doing this weird joke with you where I was like talking about Texas, Dr. Pepper, and I think you thought I was weird. And then you afterwards like, no, I get it. I get your thing. I was like, I get your thing. And like understood
Did
each other.
Did I say
other.
That?
Yeah.
I get your thing?
Yeah, something like that.
Because you
like,
were doing probably something incredibly self-deprecating, which you quickly do. You quickly are the guy to point out, yes, I don't know what I'm saying. I'm just saying stupid things.
And that's
things.
Very true, though. I have a bipolar thing of like, like you say, narcissism and hating myself. Like
so I told you, I remember, like, hey, Armin, man, I get you. I get your vibe, and we're cool.
But you saved me that day. But I don't know what we just talked about on here. I hope, I can't, I think we just went crazy into the...
I'm not using this.
Okay, good. Okay. All right, great. Well, we did it.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, listeners. Good luck out there.
So. I like Armin a lot. I think he's a talented actor, an interesting writer, and just, you know, a fascinating guy to spend some time with. I hope you agree. Thanks to Armin Weitzman. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Emily Wilson for producing. Thanks to Chris, Katie, everybody at Nerdist Industries. Thanks to the Christian Guitars for helping me out on the live show. Thank you so much for listening. Consider subscribing to the podcast. Tell a friend about it. You can email me, info@TomWilsonUSA.com, or you can write me, send a postcard, P.O. Box 18106, Encino, E-N-C-I-N-O, California, USA, number 491416, pardon me. And we'll talk to you next time. Bye.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.